This is Sarah Reith with A Place to Call Home, a series of interviews with people about their experiences with homelessness. Today we'll hear from Michelle Sides, who was homeless for a little while when her sons, now grown, were children. Michelle has beautiful posture, which I was able to observe as we sat cross-legged on the floor for this interview. She talked about how cooking good food and practicing yoga and paying attention to other people's struggles have helped her heal.
My name is Michelle Louise Sides. Reichardt. Don't get used to Reichardt.
And we met this morning at Taste Buds, which you manage. So can you talk a little bit about what you're up to these days?
I'm managing Taste Buds. It's an organic, vegan, Caribbean restaurant with yummy, delicious food. We did an event last night called Midsummer Night's Feast, and it was amazing. 250 people. It was an amazing event. Yeah. I love what I do. We cater, we do events, it's just a wonderful place. The place has a great vibe. The food is delicious, healthy, good for you. It's just amazing.
So how did you get there?
I was actually serving community service next door for, I separated from my husband about 2 years ago, and I was making some very poor choices, and I'd gotten a DUI, and was making restitution next door at hospice. It's a wonderful place to do your restitution if you ever find yourself in need. The people are great there, and Taste Buds is next door, and they launched cheese fries, and I wanted to go get some. And they had to sign up for a dishwasher, and I asked about the job, and Mark hired me on the spot. And I've been there ever since. I've been manager now for 2 months.
So how long ago was that?
It's been a year and a half. So December, a year and a half ago.
And what were you doing before you were at hospice?
My husband he's still alive, he's not dead, had a mental illness. And the services in our area have slowly over time eroded to the point where there virtually are none for mental health, people who have serious mental health issues. He had bipolar disorder and schizoaffective disorder, and went off his medications, highly symptomatic and destructive in behaviors to us, to family members, not intentionally because he's in pain, but regardless, I needed to protect my children. So that's the choices that I made. So I pulled away from the marriage, and he's no longer in the home.
And it sounds like, of course, being a mother, any mother, it's really important for you to have your kids with you, but that you know what it's like not to have them with you.
When I was homeless previous, I found myself in a situation where I'd lost my housing. I did not have my children. I did not even have value in myself. And I made choices that did not lead to more positive action or any kind of thing in my life. They just led to more negativity. Even feelings of my self-worth were so diminished that I didn't even value my life. At that time, I didn't think I had any worth or anything to offer my children. And that's also when I was homeless. I was at my lowest point. And I checked into a motel and attempted a suicide. Was not successful. Obviously, I'm sitting here with you now. But it was a very powerful moment because I went to bed that night praying to be not a burden on my children, to not be a burden on my children, to get out of their way so that they could have a wonderful life, or to be the best mother that I could possibly be. And when I awoke, I knew what the choice was, so I had determined action to get them back. And so when your motivation is love and determination, you make different choices. So even though I was still homeless and I woke up and I still had the same set of circumstances, I looked at the world with a different viewpoint. I sought out services. The community center had the opportunity for you to use the phone. They gave us toast in the morning. I would hunt for jobs. I'd use that as my starting point. I carried a clipboard, got applications, walked around town, did the things that I needed to be able to make steps to get my children back. And I did, 100%, 100%, because that's my motivating goal in life. When I felt like I had nothing to offer, that's when I made those choices. And so I found myself in that kind of dark place when I ended up at hospice too.
And you were talking a little bit earlier about resources, and you used to work at the Puff Unit. Can you talk about that?
Yes. I was a psychiatric nursing assistant at the PUF unit back from 97-2000. It was a beautiful job. My job was immediate and close contact. Like, I would be the one with the patients throughout the day for their snacks, for anything, in seclusion room, talking, vitals, art time groups, escort, just a person to talk to, just another human relating to another human while they're going through a painful experience.
What was a typical day like for you? It sounds like each day was probably atypical, but what was a day like at the PUF unit?
You're right. There's no such thing as a typical day at the PUF unit. It depends on who was there and what was happening. But it was, when I clocked on, you know, there'd be a change of shift report. You get to find out who's on the unit, what's happening, and how long they're supposed to be there, and what's going on. And then you start your day. So I would do snacks, help people with groups, find out who's discharging, who's coming. If somebody's in the seclusion room with them, every 15-minute checks. I was going through Mendocino College at the time, so I'd bring my school books. I'd do my homework and stuff at school, bring my school books into the seclusion room with me. Patient was sleeping, didn't need my attention, or talk to them, read out loud to them, whatever was needed.
And you mentioned earlier that there's been an erosion in services. And were there services available for you when you lost your housing?
Yes. And I don't even know if those things still exist. I got off the streets. They had a mental health housing beds at Ford Street, a homeless bed. And I did that for a couple of weeks. And then I got into transitional housing there at Ford Street. And then I got into their semi-permanent housing, their townhouses. And that's where I regained connection with my sons. Throughout that process, I became very close with the foster family. They're amazing people in Potter Valley. They were incredible to my children. They're lifelong friends. I believe in healing with love. So every one of these painful, dark circumstances, I've gone back to try to make right, period, always.
You were saying that you were on a dark path for a while, and that you resourced things for yourself. So can you talk about how you managed to make it through a day, like with just the basics, like food and sustenance?
There's a lot of resources in our community. At the time when I'm speaking of back in the day, but there are still a lot of resources. But if you're mindful about your choices, like I do want to eat today, I want to be conscious about what I'm going to put in my body today, then you'll make that trip to the food bank, or you'll make that trip to Plowshares. You'll make that trip. You'll make it your priority to get the places where the resources are. I was also trying to get my children back. The family center was an incredible resource for me, an incredible resource. And they let you give your time back. And so I got to help out there too, which that was my only currency, was love at the time. So being able to give back was an opportunity too. But it just, you have to find them. You have to look, you have to find them. They're not easy. But if you're in your darkness, then you're looking for choices that'll keep you there. So you really do need to find yourself. You have to find your motivation to be able to make the choices that are healthier. So there's no blanket answer for that. But there are resources out there, and they're kind, wonderful people. You just have to find them or be one.
And what about relationships with other people when you were out on the street? Were you able to find sort of an ad hoc family or communities of people you still know?
I was more like a loner on a mission. Loner on a mission. My mission was to get my kids back, so I didn't connect with them. I connected with the foster family that had them. I connected with the things that they did out there at their property. I connected with the church that they went to. I got to spend more time with my children if I went to church at the same church they did. So, hey, I got baptized. It was wonderful. I mean, I got more time. I didn't connect and bond with anything that was on the streets, because that was not my intention to stay there. It was just my intention to get my children back. But Ford Street gave me so much at that time, that when they asked me to be on the board as a peer advisor, I was on the board for Ford Street for 8 years. So I was able to give back in that way. So it's just nice when you can have that closure, and the closure is beautiful.
And you were telling me some stories earlier about interactions that you've had more recently with homeless people. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I shared this story with some reluctance because of my own personal reluctance in the moment to be who I know I am. But I was at a stoplight, and this was a couple days ago. I was on a break. Work was extremely hectic. I had gotten a little snack cup for myself of some delicious food from Taste Buds, and I was on my way to my home, and a gentleman was crossing in this crosswalk, a homeless gentleman. He was clearly homeless. He had all of his belongings, but he was ambulating so slow. He's walking so slow across the crosswalk. There were several cars in front of me. There were cars at the stoplight on both sides. And he started to walk and started to fold and knelt down in the crosswalk. And I was concerned, of course. And I thought to myself, there's got to be another angel on duty. Somebody else would do this moment. And no one did. As the light changed, people drove around him while he was in the sidewalk. In the So I pulled over and I went up next to him and I said, "So, what's up, my friend?" And he said, "Ask me, did I want to know?" He said, "Do you want to know the truth?" And I said, "Yeah, that's why I'm standing here." And he said that if I move, I'm going to shit myself. So I said, "No, well, by all means, stay right there. And I asked him when he had last eaten. He said, "A meal. I have one in my car. I have most of my snack in my car. I'll come sit with you while you are here for the moment, and then I'll give you the snack." So I gave him the food, and we stayed in the crosswalk for a few moments just chatting. And then when he felt like he could move, he got up, got to the side. He asked me what was in the cup. It was quinoa, black-eyed peas, and kale. And I asked me about quinoa, told him it was good for him. And he thanked me and said I was a nice person, and I told him he was a nice person too. And then he went on. But just no one stopped. No one cared. I witnessed at least 25 people that could have done something, but no one cares. It's so pervasive in our community now. People turn a blind eye. And I have children who are so affected by it that they do nothing but look.
What are they looking for?
Their dad. Reichart is the name that my married name. Their father had, like I mentioned before, has schizoaffective disorder. Services are not around here. He's definitely very symptomatic and homeless. And so they look at every tall, skinny, homeless person they see, looking to see if they have eyes of recognition. If that's my dad.
You said that the heartlessness is pervasive now. Has that changed during the time that you've been aware of the situation?
Not at all. And I've been aware of the situation the whole time. I've always seen people. And I don't like when people are not kind to other people, but that happens a lot. But what I see now is just, it's invisibility almost. It's like they drove around that man. What it takes to drive around a human being crumbled in a crosswalk astounds me. But so many were willing. No one stopped. I mean, it just, to me, symbolized the moment.
What do you think people out there need the most?
Love. Understanding that each one of them's different. Everybody's circumstances are different. And helping them with those circumstances so they can, like your tangled cord. Oh, nobody can see that. Never mind. When we began the interview, her cord was tangled, and it's just, and you can just leave it that way, or you could take a moment and unravel it and do it the right way and notice it, and then this will make the whole situation better. So, like your tangled cord.
How do you think that people can bring that to the folks out there who are kind of lost right now?
Don't walk by. Don't ignore. Don't ignore. You're a human too. Don't ignore. Communicate human to human. Hi. All I did for that gentleman was sit there with him in that moment and be there for him just for a second. And I had a snack. I could offer that snack. You know, and the owners of the restaurant that I work at, they volunteer on Sundays. They come Sundays to the empty restaurant, prepare a meal with their kids, and offer a free community meal from 12 to 2. That's just them. I mean, they let me participate if I want. They let staff participate if they want. But that need, that desire came from her pulling into, one of the owners pulling into the co-op, seeing bag lunches being handed out. And saying, "Wow, there's no place on the weekend to get a warm meal? There isn't. So we'll create one." And they did. Since May, that's an offering.
How much response do you get to that?
Not as much as I thought. Few families come in, but some customers come in and are like, yay, Taste Buds is open. Oh, no, we're not. This is a free meal. Here's a bowl full of love. Hopefully it gets bigger. I am definitely trying to get the word out so that people know that they can get this delicious food.
So you had 4 sons when you were out on the street, and then you had your daughters when you came back inside?
Okay. I had my 4 sons. I was only on the street for a period of time, a short period of time. I had my 4 sons. They're adults. I had them starting in my teens. I had my oldest son when I was 15. And they're 3 of them are fathers. I have 6 grandchildren. And then I met my husband in 2005. We got married 2006, and we untied my tubes in Mexico. We went across the border. Untied, it's so much cheaper there. Couldn't do that now. Oh, wow. But when we had 2 daughters, and those are my 2 young daughters now. Those are the ones who I say that look on the street. They're amazing. They're the joys of my life. Joys of my life.
Can you describe your tattoos?
Absolutely. Okay, so this first circle, they're my sons. It's an ankh in the middle. This is my son Miles. He is a gift from God. He's a gift from God. Turns out, I found out when he was 9 that he's actually from a one-night stand. So that's why I call him my gift from God. Such a blessing of a human. And created, yeah. And then this circle here represents my daughters. These are my daughters, Maya and Soraya. And this is the Gemini symbol. This is their father, Damon.
So do you think that they've learned anything from your experiences, and that you've been able to convey stuff to them?
I think that they have shown me, they've learned a lot from my experiences, because they are my sons, that our fathers are incredible fathers. They're wonderful, supportive partners to their wives. Great, great dads. I mean, just present, fully present, like all access dads, like just amazing humans, you know. And the one who's not a dad is the best funkle in the world. He is a good time 100%. They all love him, you know. So I mean, they're just incredible men. And so they learned, because they demonstrate with their life. And my daughters, they're healing incredible. You met Soraya this morning. Maya wasn't awake yet, but they're awesome. They're curious, they're playful. They go to school out at the City of 10,000 Buddhas. And I think foundationally, they get the opportunity they emphasize virtues as well as scholastic studies, and of course Chinese. So they get this well-rounded opportunity to heal and learn and grow.
And you talked a little bit about how important health is to healing, of course. So can you talk a little bit about how you incorporated that into your life?
Okay, so I did, as I said, I did make poor choices when I was really sad, when he first left, and that ended up with me where I was at hospice. But the other things that I started to do in my life to rebuild was yoga. Yoga is one of my solaces. I go to Radiant Yoga, and they give you the opportunity to do a work trade. And so instead of paying for yoga, I get to pay with my efforts. And so I clean the yoga studio once a week to be able to get unlimited yoga. It's a great opportunity for me, and I fully took it. So mind, body, health, and spirit were able to heal with that foundation. Then I got that amazing job at Taste Buds, and from dishwasher, Michelle, do you want to learn how to work the front? Michelle, you want to be a raw chef? You know, I hadn't learned cook side yet, but I was getting as much as I possibly could, because the food was great, the kids were loving it, and I was feeling so much better, physically, spiritually, mentally, just on every level. So the only thing that I had a hard time with at first was that the trajectory of my life was going so beautifully, and the trajectory of my children's father's life was going the other direction. It was hard to navigate that balance with my daughters. I hear them now. I can tell healing is happening because they mention their dad more. They talk about him more. I put pictures up in their room, like their wedding, my wedding picture and stuff that used to hang in the living room. You know, I put that in their bedroom. I share things that I find of his with them. So they do still have a connection. But and I connect with his family, his mother, his sisters. We just recently all got together, rode the skunk train, celebrated. It was nice. So I still keep that connection as close as I possibly can.
And the way that you were talking about food earlier, it sounds like cooking is kind of a meditation for you.
Absolutely. Mom of six, you have to, with resources limited, you make something out of nothing all the time. And then you learn to love it. At least I did. And so now I am very crafty with being able to do that. And it just feels good. I love serving good food. I love smelling good food. I love cooking good food. I love making people smile. I mean, I love smiling. It's a good thing.
And are you also an artist?
I paint with my life. I appreciate art, though. I appreciate art. It's another way to see into someone's soul. So when you get a chance to look at someone's artwork, you're looking at them. So it's just another vantage point. I like that. I grew up in Washington, D.C. The monument, the museums and stuff are free. And my mom worked on Capitol Hill. So we used to walk around museums and stuff all the time. I just developed an appreciation.
Talk about how you paint with your life. That sounds really beautiful.
Paint with my life. Well, it's just, I feel like the currency that I'm able to give all the time at any time is my doable actions, my love. And that's, so I make myself a sacred space. And I just do. So if I encounter someone or if I encounter something, I try to make it better. I try to do my best. I always tell my children, don't do anything if you can't do it in excellence.
So it sounds like the virtues that you mentioned earlier that your kids are learning at school are at least on a par with their academic accomplishments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love the City of 10,000 Buddhas for the fact that they nurture the entire child. Not just the mindset, not just that, just the entire child, the entire child, the virtues, that the things that don't necessarily get a chance to get addressed in a larger classroom. Those aren't the emphasis. You're testing to scores. I really appreciate the small class size. I love peacocks. Peacocks roam free on the grounds. So, yeah.
So, how do you think that the virtues can be emphasized on a wider social level?
With action. With action. If people remember, they're important. When people put the emphasis on money and lose sight of the fact that you're working with human beings, you're helping human beings, and you're helping them find their light, not money. You know, you can't grow something that's not alive. Money is not alive. People are. That's the truth.
So you spoke a little bit earlier about how you, as an individual, helped an individual man by giving him a snack and listening to him and being sympathetic. And I'm wondering if you've done more formal, structured work with helping families who are dealing with homelessness.
When I had the opportunity to work for Ford Street, I ran a family reunification program, housing project. I was on Despina. It was a wonderful program. It was partnership with CPS, the drug court, and Ford Street to provide housing for homeless parents who were in the process of reunifying with their children. They needed a spot, a home, to be able to be together. And so we provided that kind of home. It was a beautiful home. And I had some amazing women come through the program. We created family in a house. I mean, we bought the groceries, made menus. Each woman had their own turn doing chores, cooking. The kids participated, turned the garage into a playland. It was beautiful. The program morphed because the need morphed, the need increased. So they relocated the program to the Ford Street, the housing itself, so that they could include homeless fathers. At the house, I only had mothers, and on the grounds, I had fathers as well. And all I can say for that is that it was a lovely opportunity. I mean, and it was a pleasure to be a part of those families being able to reunify and watching them grow. I remember the process for myself.
So what did you learn from watching other people's process of getting back together with their kids and figuring out how to make their lives work?
It keeps going. I mean, I'm friends with some of the people that went through the program on Facebook. So I still kind of keep up with their lives. And some of them, they're just they're doing great, and some of them are going through struggles, but they're conquering them, and they're just living life every day. They're amazing. Like I said, they were some amazing people. I was going to just say women, but then I got the guys too. They were amazing fathers. It's the choices. It's the choices. Like I say, when you're attached to your darkness, you make dark choices. And when you're attached to your light, you make light choices. And with those programs, we were able to create this sacred space, an opportunity for them to really just be parents, be together, not worry about anything else, because they had a lot on their plate. The kids, the parents, everyone. So it was nice to be able to create that space.
So without telling somebody else's story for them, is there a particular memory that you have from that time that just really stays with you?
Yeah, actually, I had a staff member, an incredible woman. This woman was Miss Victoria. Oh, so incredible. She had a simple minor surgery. She was part-time with me. She had a simple minor surgery, and she died on the table. And I wasn't aware. Her kids didn't know she had this part-time job. So nobody, Miss Victoria, nobody had told me at first. And the women in the house were very attached, as well as I was. We loved her very much, and I just didn't have anything to tell them because I didn't have any knowledge. And one of the moms got moved to got a place of her own, and they went there the first night. And this was like a couple of nights after this happened. And her children thought they saw Miss Victoria. She had already passed, but she was so an integral part of their lives that was just amazing to me. I mean, we were able to connect on a level that even at a time when a staff member passed, her children are at a whole nother location and speak her name. I mean, we were all so connected. It was beautiful. Miss Victoria is something special. She was something special. I'm glad that women had the opportunity to have her in their life too.
Well, is there anything that you'd like to add that I didn't ask you about?
Not really. I just would like people to remember that these are people, period. You know, I know that my daughters stretch their neck looking at every 6'4" homeless man, and there are a lot of them out there, and they're looking for their one human, but everybody out there is somebody's one human. Everybody's life does matter, and we need to start acting like it. Not driving around the person who is in the street struggling. Just any place you can make a difference, make one. That's it.
This is Sarah Reith with A Place to Call Home. We just heard Michelle Sides reflecting on some of her life experiences, which include homelessness.
Because I had a son.
When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the streets. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, I'm scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Shed tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hell, hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whooping to my backside. And even as a crack fiend, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did it, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Baby, don't you know we love you, sweet.
Dear mama,
baby, place no one above you, sweet.
You all appreciate it.
You know we love you.
You understand.